Oh, hello, hello again. And three times in a row today. And I got Captain Morris Campbell coming back with us, and we're going to talk a little saltwater. Morris just came in. He's been on the water all day out there. Find out what's going on in this wide world of saltwater fishing. A little update for you, boys and girls. Hey, Morris.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. So what's happening out there? You said you caught some redfish today.
Yeah, things are changing dramatically out there with that cold front passage. I mean, water temperatures are starting to go down into winter temperatures, and it looks like everything's really wanting a shrimp or a piece of cut bait now. We fished with shrimp today, and we fished in the Boca Grande Bayou and big flat area, and we were catching redfish on live shrimp. You know, pretty good sized shrimp. Got some good shrimp.
So, is there much for other bait around the area right now?
There's still some white bait around, but with the water temperature starting to go down to near normal temperatures for this time of year, you'll find the fish less likely to chase the white bait and quite a bit more likely to chase the slower moving shrimp.
So are you putting them on bobbers, sinkers, jig heads?
I was using the little pencil corks with the weighted pencil corks. I use those when I'm shrimp fishing, and the terns are really bad right now. They're really getting educated diving on baits, so you have to use a little split shot to sink the shrimp quickly so the tern doesn't pick it off. Otherwise, I would just fish it with, just the shrimp free lined under the cork.
Well, if you're listening up north and you're not familiar with this, tern is a type of seagull, basically.
Yeah.
But they dive into the water. And the problem is, they'll go down. If your bait doesn't go down fast enough, they dive down, whether it's a shrimp or a bait fish. They'll pick it up, and then you got to reel them in and take the hook out. And they're mean little buggers.
Oh, well, they'll try to bite you and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they're not going to hurt you, but it's just
aggravating because they're diving right. And we're fishing, shallow areas usually with little potholes and up in the mangroves and things. And, in 2 feet of water, when you got birds diving in the water from up in the air, that tends to spook those fish.
Yeah, you finally get on a decent bite, and then the darn birds are diving in on your bait, spooking the fish, and eventually one of them gets hooked. And then you always feel bad, and you do everything you can to avoid it. I just want to let you know what a tern is. It's a very annoying flying rat.
Yeah, flying rat's a good description.
Yeah.
Now, we fished a couple days ago, Pine Island Sound, did real well down there. We did well on redfish, snook, trout, and just caught as many snook and redfish as you could ever want to catch. I mean,
now a couple of days ago, was the bait different? Were you using?
I was still using shrimp.
Still using shrimp.
Yeah, I just it when it gets into the winter time, I will use the white bait, but I really would prefer to just use the shrimp.
Yeah,
give my back a little rest from throwing the cast in.
Go into the bait shop, you get a few dozen shrimp, you go out, you don't chase around, you don't run around. It's funny, it's a little more money up front, but by the time you figure the gas and the time and everything else,
wear and tear on your spinal column.
Yeah, it's it's all right when I was in my 20s, but
oh yeah, I've definitely downsized from the 12-foot net to a 10-foot.
Oh yeah. Sure. I think the biggest I ever threw was commercial fishing up in the Panhandle. We were throwing 16s mm-hmm. back then. And then I went to 14, then I went to 12, then I went to 10. I'm still at 10 yet, but yeah. I'm just not throwing those big nets anymore.
No,
it hurts too much.
And this time of year, I mean, regardless of water temperature and what bait's around, the fish know what time of the year it is, and they're used to eating shrimp this time.
The shrimp are migrating right now.
That's correct.
They're leaving the flats. Shrimp don't actually, quote, live in Charlotte Harbor, but they grow up here.
Mm-hmm.
Adult shrimp like to live in 60-plus feet of water, 60 to thousands of feet of water out in the oceans or Gulf, but they grow up in this marshland, and as they're growing up, I would say once they start getting around 4 inches, because the eggs are laid, and it takes about a year or so for them to get up to bigger sizes. But the eggs are out, they've spawned, they've hatched, they've done, whatever their mating thing is. and those eggs are going everywhere, and they're leaving. You can talk. You want to join in, Austin?
I wasn't talking. He was telling me to be quiet.
Yeah. Austin's working the counter out there tonight. But as they get bigger and bigger, then it, as soon as it turns cold, they all start moving out of the passes. Have you noticed any shrimp leaving? Have you been out there at night lately?
I actually saw a boat shrimping last night when I left Boca Grande.
So the shrimp are moving.
Yeah.
And that's the other reason shrimp is the bait at this kind of time of year, because they're on the move, they're migrating, they're coming off the flats, they're going through the harbor, and millions upon millions upon millions of shrimp are all trying to make it to the Gulf of Mexico. Mm-hmm. So it's the predominant food source at this point.
And the redfish that I cleaned today, all of the redfish had smaller shrimp that were not our shrimp in their belly that they were eating. So one particular redfish had 3.5 inch, almost 2 inch long shrimp in his belly. He had three of them in there, and we didn't have a shrimp anywhere near that size, and no one was fishing with those. Those were just natural, you know, free shrimp that were out there, and the redfish decided he was going to eat. And so our shrimp offerings were readily accepted because that's what they're eating right now.
So anyway, that's why we kind of went in. I wanted you guys to understand that a tern is a bird that dives down, looks a lot like a seagull. Annoying buggers. I love watching them if I'm standing on the beach or something like that, but they're the very aggressive ones.
They're really aggressive, and they've been taught by some of the people who chum with the live minnows, which is not a bad technique to use, but a lot of people overdo it and they throw too much bait in the water, and the birds have learned that we're, you know, the boats are out there and they throw chum in the water, and therefore they just associate your bait with the chum, and they just, you know, they go boat to boat and do the thing, and they've just been taught bad habits.
Yeah, well, it's more or less easy prey. Why work so hard if you can just
That's right.
And get the food right there? But now they go after it when it's on a hook or anything else. And it's a problem. You never want to hurt wildlife. It's annoying that they're that aggressive. And as far as the shrimp goes, you keep hearing about you got to use this, you got to use that. But there's no perfect bait for a season, is there?
Not really. I mean, you can catch a fish on a shrimp year-round. But by the same token, you know, you can catch a lot of fish on a piece of cut bait year-round as well.
Or a white bait. But the guys who are the most successful, the captains, the recreational fishermen, are the ones that use the bait for that particular month or that particular water temperature. Using the correct bait, well, you're going to catch more fish. And if you change from shrimp to cut bait to white bait to pinfish, if the more you're willing to adapt what the fish want, the more likely you are to catch them.
That's correct.
That, I think, is the hardest thing for people to learn. There isn't the best bait, but by doing different things at different times, what do you really care if you're throwing a white bait or a pinfish or a shrimp or a cut bait? What's the difference? The difference is how many fish get on the end of that line.
Yeah, I have people tell me, oh, well, I don't really want to catch a snook on live bait. I want to catch a big snook on a lure. And I said, well, do you really want to catch a big snook and have it shot at more than a few, or do you want to just catch one, you know, after you fished 4 or 5 times probably on a lure? Well, I've never really caught a big snook. I said, well, then what does it really matter, you know, if you catch it on artificial or live? Some people are just purists.
I think the only difference to me is with live bait, if you happen to be reeling it in at the moment, you get the same sensation.
Mm-hmm.
But with live bait, you get the fight, you know, and you feel the battle and the pull. But the fish has it. You're setting the hook, you know, doing all that. You get the battle of it. With the lure, subsurface lure like a jig or a spoon or a crankbait, you get the feel of the strike.
Mm-hmm.
It's that one additional step. And you get to feel that bam of the hit. Now, the other thing I would say, though, the only way you would go beyond that is to go to a topwater,
mm-hmm.
where you see the strike, feel the strike, and then get the fight. But the fight doesn't change. There's no difference in the fight on a bait or the fight on a lure. It's the only difference to me is in that initial moment.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, when they fish the top water and they get the big snook that strikes it, they see the strike, they hear the strike, then they pull the lure away from the fish and never get a chance to experience the fight.
Have you ever noticed how all these people that get so, oh my God, animals can do this, and animals are so quick, and animals can do this, and all that. Humans are quick. I mean, people routinely will grab a snake by the head as it's striking. I mean, there's a lot of people that can do that. I'm not personally going to try it, but, you know, I've seen people do it. And I know if when I go into, I flip the switch, the light switch in a room, and sometimes to me it takes a bit.
Yeah.
Between the click and the light coming on. And it's surprising how fast your reactions can be. And so when you're fishing topwater, what was it? I don't know what that was. I guess it was your phone. All right. But how quick humans are, because you see the fish strike at that topwater, and you literally can set the hook fast enough to pull it away from the fish.
Away from him.
Because you'll see the splash, and before the fish can close its mouth and connect to the lure, you've already jerked it away.
That happens a lot.
And I mean, humans are quick. I got to give the human species, animal, I mean, it's proper thing. We're quick, run long distances. I mean, humans are amazing animals. They live in almost every climate on the planet.
They do.
And, you know, the only one I don't think we could survive in is Antarctica, but every other one they live. I mean, go in the middle of Sahara, and all of a sudden, here you got some goonballs living in a tent.
There you go. He comes running by you.
Yeah. Like, really? So, anyway, just kudos to the human machine. Back into the fishing. Are you finding fish more going to the trees or more out in the open flats?
I've been fishing a lot of potholes that were secluded away from the wind, you know, just pretty much sheltered, looking for coves and places like that. And with this water temperature going down, looking closer to places where they're going to migrate, like canals, creeks, river mouths, things like that. You know, you want to look for them staging in those areas, because as the water temperature goes down, these fish are going to be going into warmer water.
Now, to me, the reason they're going into the canals, they're going to go into creeks, they're going to go, especially the browner the water, the darker the water, the more they're heading into it, the blacker the bottom, the more they're going to it. Simple matter of solar power.
That's right, thermal heating.
I mean, the sun's radiation is absorbed way more by darker colors. So if you've got dark water with a dark bottom, that water's going to heat up during the day. The clear water, white sandy bottom, is going to reflect the sunlight. It's not going to absorb it, and it's going to stay colder.
There you go.
So at this time of year, I have an opinion. Let's see if yours is the same. I know what tide I want to fish. Do you have a preference, incoming or outgoing tide, and while it's cold like this?
When it's cold like this, I generally do better on an outgoing tide. And the reason it's the outgoing tide is because the water tends to be flowing warmer at that time. When the tide's coming back in to these areas, it's pulling cooler water out of the bay into these areas, and they tend to not feed as well.
See, that's exactly, we're 100% on the same page, because the clearer water of the Gulf of Mexico, the clearer water in the middle of the harbor, is not going to be warmed up. But you take very shallow water from some of these tidal pools, a lot of our creeks, most of them, the water has a brown tint to it, or even dark brown. The bottom is usually mucky, black. It's a solar collector. Those waters all get warmed up. And then as the tide turns to go out, this is by midday afternoon outgoing tide. It's going to be my favorite tide to fish this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when the warmest water hits. And it's not really going to affect the fish that much, but it's going to affect their food a lot.
There you go. I've often told people at seminars and customers and things, you know, if we're going fishing for snook, we need to, and the water's cold in the wintertime, we need to not even think about going fishing until, you know, leave at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock in the day. they fish the warmest part of the day, because you know when it's at a critical temperature, those fish, you know, they'll only be active for an hour or two, regardless of tide, when their body temperature allows them to feed. Another thing is, if you're fishing for redfish this time of year, redfish aren't affected by that cold water, but what they eat is dang sure affected by it. The shrimp, crabs, and little fish like that, you know, the redfish are going to look for them, but they're not going to find them. But when it starts to warm up a little bit during the day, you're going to, there they are. They're out there eating them.
They're popping up. They're going to move. Everything's happening. 100% on the same page with you on that, because this is the time of year for those late day outgoing tides. And I will tell you, and it was kind of funny because Morris took out a group of, what, four people today?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And people don't understand that there is a difference in Florida. We have the coldest, chilliest, most bone-chilling cold in the world. When it hits 60 degrees in Florida, you better be bundled up like it's 25 in Minnesota.
Absolutely.
When you get on a boat in Florida and it's in the 60s, when it's not 75 or up, anything under 75, it starts getting cold. 70 degrees out on the water here, and especially mornings, evenings, I can tell you, I don't know how many times I would take people and I'd say, bring jackets. It's going to be like 65, 66 degrees in the morning. No, we're good. So as soon as I heard, okay, yeah. Oh, we'll be fine, don't you know? We come from a lot colder weather than this. I bring four or five extra jackets. Now, today you brought towels for them.
Towels, yeah.
Because that was the only thing you had. If I knew I was taking somebody out in the morning, I would put four or five extra jackets on. Because otherwise, it's the cracker, driving the boat because I'm feeling bad because they're paying for me to go. So I would give them my jackets because within 5 minutes of hitting that throttle, it is iceberg cold.
Absolutely. I almost froze a poor fellow from Canada one year. He wanted to fish for snook, and it was January, and it was cold. It was actually in the 30s that morning.
Oh, my God.
And I did talk him into going at 9 instead of at 7:30 in the morning, and he shows up in a long-sleeve shirt and a little light windbreaker kind of jacket and just, you know, a pair of short pants. And by the time we stopped at the first spot, you know, we made about a 3-mile run to the creek we were going to go up and fish. His lips were purple, and he was shaking uncontrollably, and he laughed at me because I had my snowmobile suit on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's the humidity. You know, wind chill up north is a big thing.
It's crazy.
When you add the temperature and the wind and everything together, you get in a boat doing 30 miles an hour, and you've got the 30-mile-an-hour wind and the air temp. That's one thing. Add 105% humidity to that.
Because you're actually running through the water. And
Yeah. You're right on the water running in the most a very, very humid atmosphere.
Yeah, when I'm out west fly fishing in the mountains, when we're in Montana and it's 40 degrees, it's a different 40 degrees. If it's 40 degrees here, it is bitter.
Yep. I think it's got to be the humidity. You go to Arizona, and it's 100. I've been out there in 114 degrees and riding horses. It was okay. You know, I wasn't that bad. But you get out here when it's 85 degrees and 98% humidity. There's a difference.
Big difference.
I'll take the humidity every time.
Yes.
I can't get used to the idea of being in the desert because I didn't grow up there. I just visit because I love the desert. When you get in the wind, it gets hotter.
Yes.
Like somebody sticks a hairdryer in your face.
It's a hot wind.
You know, that's why swamp coolers don't work in Florida. But anyway, as weird as all that was and as boring as all that was, are you seeing much besides snook and redfish out right now?
A lot of speckled trout, and the trout, a lot of them are still in the same holes with the redfish and snook. But a lot of the trout are starting to migrate to the deeper channel cuts. I caught some real nice trout off of the intercoastal.
Now, what's weird is the trout they're cold water fish. Mm-hmm. They, even the sea trout, they like our spotted speckled trout. they like that chillier water. I wonder why they go into that deeper water like that. That to me would be a creature that would want more warmth out of the water, more of a neutral temperature. But yet they all seem to do it. As the water gets cold, they all seem to fall into those deeper holes.
They do.
And I would target the creeks and the cuts.
I would look in creeks, canals, cuts, any channel, in the channel.
Yeah.
They really get in there. If it gets particularly cold, you can catch really nice speckled trout way up past the interstate bridge in the river right now.
I wonder what that is. I can't figure out a logical reason for a fish that enjoys the colder water so much to leave the flats where it'd be nice and chilly. Not extremely cold, but let's say 60 degrees, and go fall into a 10, 12 feet of water somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Muddy bottom, and they're supposed to like sandy, grassy bottom.
Right. I've never figured it out. It's one of the things on trout fishing I've never understood. But
I don't know why, but I know they do, and therefore, we're usually successful no matter what time of year it is. But
it is a, we know they do, but I've never even been able to guesstimate a formula for why.
Don't know. Sometime you'll find a school of trout that, who knows how many are in it, just hundreds of them, and they're all piled in one deep hole with no structure to hold them there. They're in there, they're social, and they're feeding like crazy, and you can catch one after another.
Oh, yeah. I used to love doing that in the mouth of the Myakka Cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be one of my absolute favorite spots, especially when the water was so shallow. I would, even the customers out in a boat, turn it off, raise the motor up, and get out and just push the boat and the people up into there because there wasn't enough for a trolling motor. The keel would be sliding in the mud, and I'd just force that boat up in there, drop an anchor out the front and back, and right as soon as that tide started coming in, literally one fish after another. It would take me longer to put bait on, like a shrimp on a popping cork, than it would for them to catch a fish. So then you switch them to jigs, and then, they got the jig thing down. Then you give them a couple of crankbaits, and they do that. Then you turn them on to topwaters. And I would literally, as the customer's, skill level progressed, take them up through the different types of lures. And starting with the bait, going into ending with the topwater. And it would just be so much fun. But it was always that deep water, surrounded by nothing but shallow, nothing in it, just a blank hole. And I've never figured out why they would do that.
And that made me think of something that we discussed on a previous show when we were talking, fresh water about the crawdads. And the plastic crawfish that we buy and we use for bass, and we were talking about using for bass on the jigs.
Right.
Those are absolutely deadly on speckled sea trout.
Really?
They adore them. They strike them. We use them quite often in lieu of live shrimp. Pull up to a hole, for instance, on a trip this past winter, not this winter, but past winter, and we pulled up on a hole and we caught several smaller trout, keeper size, but 15, 17 inch trout. No bites on the shrimp, I take one of these plastic craws and just put it on a circle hook with the same exact rig I just put a shrimp in, cast it in, hand it to the guy, and he catches a 27-inch trout on it.
Yeah.
And then we commenced to catching 20-plus-inch trout. And it was, I tried it on a whim a couple years back, and it's, on my bay boat now, I always have plastic crawfish of some kind in there, some kind of craw.
Well, they look like a little lobster, a shrimp, or whatever, it's perfect.
Let's see, Berkeley, they're Gulp. they have a little plastic crawfish or
yep.
ghost shrimp or something they call it, and boy, do they really work.
I sell these horny toads. They're ribbits, horny
oh,
toads.
Oh, yeah,
they're
plastic frogs work,
plastic
too.
Frogs, exactly, and they got the little feet on them, and they're frogs. My number one market for those, when I started carrying them, I carry quite a few of them, and it's a holdover, because the guys are still buying them for bass, and we do okay on it. The number one I had in 2013, a guy came out and started using those, and it was snook.
Mm-hmm.
they were the number one snook lure, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, Gasparilla Sound, Pine Island Sound. All of the tournament guys, all of the guys throwing lures, all had this secret going on. And it was the plastic frogs. Mm-hmm. The snook were, it was an incredible snook bite on them. And I mention that now, and the guys look at me like, well, but I spent 2 years actually making money on frogs instead of, now they're part of the general fund, but that was actually a profit center for a while. I had so many different frogs because the guys were buying them for bass, because they work on bass, of course. But it was the flats fishing guys, when they got into the snook, and I don't know about redfish with them, but I do know for, it was three snook seasons. It was a fall, a spring season, and another fall season. I sold frogs, and I mean a lot of them. The guys were coming in and just buying bags and bags and bags.
Well, your topwater frog with the skirts on the back, if you take and trim the legs up a little short on them, so right. You know, not cut them all the way off, but you can trim them up to where they're, you know, an inch long or so, inch and a half long, instead of the 2 or 3 inch legs. Redfish go nuts over those, and you can fish that up in the shallowest grassy areas. You can throw it a lot of places in South Carolina and up in Jacksonville area where, you know, you don't have mangroves. You have all this seagrasses, sawgrass, and things right. like that that they're fishing in. You can throw those topwater frogs in there, and you know, like live target frog or something like that. Throw that thing in
there. I use the Booyah because it's literally half the price.
Yeah, but you can.
I will say the live target's a little more perfect looking, but I would say the Booyah's 80% is perfect and literally 50% the cost.
And if you're a redfish, you don't mind either one.
No.
But I've caught snook and redfish, and I've caught all three, trout, snook, and redfish on the plastic frogs. And you know, most of the time when I'm fishing, I don't have customers that throw lures that I actually trust to cast around me as well. So we don't do that. But you know, a lot of times when I'm fishing, and that's when we can experiment.
Or if you have a client, a customer who's been with
really
you,
really good caster
that proves he's not going to give you a nose ring. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, but the plastic frog is a deadly weapon in fresh and salt water.
Yeah, I just was unsure about the redfish. I knew about the snook.
And the only thing with the redfish, when the redfish bites your frog, it's just like a bass, only a little longer. You want to wait for probably a count of 3 or 4 before you set the hook on the plastic frog.
Really?
Because when they take that plastic frog on the surface and they go with it, they don't really have it. You know, when they strike it, you don't strike them immediately. You actually let them load up on the tip of your rod and then strike, and you'll hook everyone.
Wait till the rod loads up, yep. And then hit them. And by loading up the rod, when you get a fish on, guys, you're going to see the tip start moving towards the fish. Just hold the rod at a 90-degree angle. Don't set it. And keep your hand with a pretty good grip. And most rods will bend, and then all of a sudden you'll actually feel the pull start. Mm-hmm. Pull back off of that. But yep. It's not when the rod starts to bend. It's when you actually feel the pressure engage.
Because the fish doesn't know he doesn't know it's fake.
Right.
And when the plastic frogs are hollow and soft. They squish down right. But when he gets it in his mouth, especially redfish, they're a little challenged with where their mouth's located on their face.
Yeah. How they even get to a topwater?
Oh, it's fun watching them do it, though.
Because they roll up. They come sideways. But most often, I think what's the most spectacular part about redfish topwater is they bring their whole body up out of the water like a submarine and do a circle into it, or will literally try and jump up and come down on it.
Get their mouth on it.
Yeah, their mouth is so far down on the bottom of their face. It's amazing. You seen any schools of pompano?
There's been some pompano out off the old fishing pier. In Boca Grande Pass, Johnson Shoal, there have been some pompano caught there. A lot of the guys that are fishing commercially for pompano, rod and reel, but fishing commercially still, are catching them in Little Pass, Gasparilla Pass.
What's the bait?
Silly Willy jigs. You can You can use
them. Let them go to the bottom or just
You want to hop them off the bottom because the pompano schools are going to follow the bottom. They're not going to be suspended. You know, occasionally you'll catch one suspended, but most of the time they're on the bottom, 90%.
So you really want to let it hit the bottom, give a good lift up, let it hit the bottom, good lift up.
Yep, nice little snap of the wrist, you know, not a big, enormous jig motion. I generally just, you know, just enough twitch the wrist enough to hop it off the bottom of, you know, 6, 8, 10 inches, and then, you know, watch for the bite on the fall a lot of times. Well, more than half the time when you jig the thing up, and it starts to fall, that's when they're going to really bite it.
So you're not really going to feel the fish hit it. You're going to be lifting the rod to start your next jigging pattern, and that's when you're going to find the fish.
You're going to find a fish on it if you don't see your line twitch.
Right. Well, well, that's actually pretty cool. Let's see. Have you seen or heard of anybody doing triple tail out there?
I caught 2 triple tail off of some of the crab floats inside the harbor. Not today, but last week there were triple tail on the markers. So even, you know, you don't have to be in the Gulf if you're cruising down a marker line, and it doesn't even have to be a stone crab marker. It can be a blue crab marker, or, you know, I've caught them off a
potato chip bag.
Yeah, I've caught them off of crazy stuff. I've caught them just out there in the wide open, laying on their side right up on the top. So just always
craziest weird fish.
Always pay attention. They're crazy good eating too.
Now, only a couple more questions for you. Cobia, anything?
I haven't seen any cobia, and normally this time of year I catch cobia cruising the surface out in the Gulf, in pretty close to the same areas you would catch triple tail. But I haven't seen them, and that's because of water temperature.
I think I'm gonna have egg on my face because I was giving a February fishing report, and I might not, but with the way things have been going in this, I think it's a La Nina year. I mean, with the way the weather pattern's going, it's screaming to me La Nina, and I can't find out if it is or it isn't, but I was thinking sometime in February we're going to get hit with a shark, a cobia, the whole bit, rampage in, because that water's going to come up about 5 degrees, and just everything's going to just strike up and just hit hard.
Well, I'm hoping we have that early spring, and if it does, then we're going to have a big spring season and summer.
Well, this cold spell now has got me a little worried.
If it goes cold and you know, sometime in our state, you know, February can be a colder month than March, or a colder month than January.
Yeah.
February and into March can be just brutal.
So I'm really hoping that my initial look at the weather patterns and everything was the correct one, and that we're going to see a nice little bump in the water temperature and have a bunch of big fish come in. But I'm beginning to think that I might have miscalled this. This, you know, I might have been on with the wrong thing, because if it stays down here a little bit, which is actually better, because the longer it stays cold, the longer it takes to warm up and keeps the algae down, keeps the water cleaner, everything works better. But I'm just wondering if I'm going to be right, because the only thing that's around right now, I've heard, is a little bit of black tips, some bonnets, stuff like that. A lot of bonnet sharks this year.
Yeah, before this last cold front, there were a lot of black tips. There were still some bull sharks around. They were pretty close proximity to the tarpon that were still around, and they were, you know, Widdens Creek was full of bull sharks and tarpon, big tarpon, not small ones. And the bull sharks were anywhere from 6 to 9 feet long that were in Widdens Creek. We had probably a 20 shark black tip day on the Bull Bay bar outside. We were catching trout and redfish out there and just got crashed with
I love when the sharks move in.
The 3 to 4 foot long black tips, we were catching them on 3,000 ballistics and just having a blast with
it's
them.
Just nothing like it. It's got
they jump.
The strength of a redfish, the speed of a bonefish. Yeah, I mean,
and they jump. So, you know, these sharks were jumping out of the water and, you know, and spinning like crazy and doing the things that black tip sharks do. And, you know, we spent the better part of an hour and a half just catching one after another on light tackle, having a blast. I mean, they clean half your spool off on the first run.
Excellent. So, anything else we should be going over?
You know, that's about it. One thing that we hadn't touched on, and they're really biting well right now, are sheephead.
Really?
And sheephead, yesterday and today, I noticed that the Placida trestle there at going across to Boca Grande was lined with fishermen, and there were a lot of bent rods and a lot of sheephead coming over the rail. The guys that were fishing around the pilings and the little boats, usually from up north, the little V-bottom aluminum boats,
yeah.
They had bent rods, and they, you know, sheephead were coming to the bucket or the cooler because they were all going home. And we actually caught some real nice sheep's head on the flats, you know, fishing for the redfish and trout and stuff. We caught pretty nice sheep's head, too.
All right. Now, I know I have a lot of opinions about what people should use and maybe use or not use. What size hook do you like, or is there a favorite style? What size would you say in style?
Well, if I'm specifically targeting sheep's head, I'll do it a little different than a lot of folks would. You know, I'm going to use two baits. If I'm going after sheep's head, I want a cooler full of sheep's head. I'm going to use two baits. I'm going to spend the time, and I'm going to find the crabs, and they could be oyster crabs or fiddler crabs, depending on
right.
how cold it is. But I'll find those, and if I can't find those, I want to come to Fish and Frank's, and I'm going to buy worms, live worms, freshwater worms.
Yeah, night crawlers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Red wigglers or night crawlers.
The only problem I got with the wigglers is when I do them, I have to go to the crappie hooks, otherwise I split them in half all
right.
the time.
And I'm so, using a size, I use a size 3, and I use that live bait hook, and it's a heat-treated hook, and I'm pretty sure it's either Gamagatsu or On or one of those, but it's a forged hook, it's a number 3.
Okay, the problem with it is I don't think I carry that one because I've pretty much gone back to the standards. Now, if I remember in the transposition of that, that's going to put it about number 2.
Okay, well, we can do a size 2. It would work fine.
No, because almost everybody's eliminated.
The
odd
numbers.
It used to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
mm-hmm.
and now they're going 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12,
okay.
getting smaller and smaller on that side. And I'm just, but a 3, I don't remember if it was closer to the 2-aught or the 2, because it was a bigger hook. It wasn't a tiny hook.
Yeah, the three was in between, a little smaller than a size 2 on mine, the ones I was using.
And, okay, so you're looking between a 2 and a 4 if you're looking at most hooks.
It has to be a forged hook, though. You can't
right.
just use a fine wire hook like a freshwater.
Well,
that's
why I go
bite
to the,
through it.
That's why I go to the night crawlers,
mm-hmm.
because I can keep, they don't split apart on me as much. If I go to the night crawler and just use pieces of night crawler, I can keep it on the hook better. The wigglers, I just can't keep without splitting them apart and breaking them up. It's too hard for me to keep them on the hook.
Mm-hmm. My favorite, when I'm using either crab or a live worm, my favorite areas to target a sheep's head are those areas where there's not a lot of current. I don't like current when I'm specifically targeting a sheep head. And the reason that I try to find areas that are out of a current, and it's highly successful, I don't use any weight when I'm fishing for them either. I'll put that on just the hook, and I'll let that free line down, and it's almost 100% hookup ratio with the sheep's head, because you just watch your line, you see how your crab floats down, you see how the worm floats down. As soon as the sheep head touches it, you know it, your line says, hey, there's something here, and your line, you wait till you see the line start to swim off, close the bail, and when the line comes tight, you just give a very light hook set, and you've got a sheep head hook firmly in the mouth every time.
And I tell people, if they're going out and the tide stops, because the snook, the redfish, the trout, and all that, if the water's not moving, the bite is not going to be very good at all.
That's true.
But
the sheephead will.
Especially at this time of year. You got the snappers, you got the sheephead, all them bite readily, even in my opinion, better on that slack tide.
They
so
do.
If I'm sitting out there fishing, like say in Gasparilla Sound, Wooden Creek, or whatever, and the water's starting to stop, I know this bite's about done. I'll run over to the trestle and do pretty much what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And bada bing, I'm catching fish, and the water's not moving. Once the water starts moving again, I've got several sinker techniques that I try to use, but I agree with you that free lining down really works, but it's impossible in a current. So as soon as that water starts moving, now I know I can go back and catch the trout and the redfish and the snook and all that back in the flats or the jacks or whatever that are not going to hit on that moving water. So if you change what you're fishing for and where you're fishing, realistically, you're changing where you're fishing. On the slack tide, just go sheephead snappers because they like the slack tide because when the water's moving, they're always looking into the water, into the wind. They're always going nose to the current. And as soon as the current stops, they mill around, they figure out everything in the area, and they'll bite things that they may not have ever seen while the water wasn't just going in one direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, again, pretty much on the same page.
I honed that technique up on the Alifier River back in the late 70s and early 80s up there before I came down and moved back down to the home area down here. And it was quite effective. And
oh, I think you're 100% on the money with it. So I was looking for an argument, looking for a fight. I didn't find one. What can I say? Anything else we should be going over?
That pretty much sums it up right now. I mean, we've talked shark, sheep's head, trout, redfish, snook, triple tail. I mean, we've covered about everything out there. I mean, you know, as soon as the Gulf starts to settle down from these fronts, there's some grouper out there, and they can be caught.
I've been snapper. Hearing a little bit more about the grouper and snapper and all that, and try and get it a little more in-depth on the inshore stuff. But anyway, as I say, yes, Virginia, there is a fishing Frank, and that's me. And that's Morris Campbell in the chair across from me. And Morris does do freshwater charters right now. He is not doing saltwater charters at the moment. He's been exclusively booked by a corporation, so he is in that. But if he does get some time off, he does do freshwater trips. And we'll put you in contact with Morris if you get a hold of me. And you can go from there. But anyway, Fishing Frank here, Cap Morris there, and you guys everywhere else. If you're in Wisconsin right now, Minnesota, North Dakota. No, I didn't laugh.
Yeah, you did.
I'm sorry, guys. Man, it's cold up there. I've been watching the weather. Good luck, y'all. Stay warm. Stay safe. Watch out for idiots who think that snow is concrete. So drive safe, everybody, and all across everywhere. And there was one other thing I was going to mention, but anyway, I forgot what it was, so we'll just see you on the next Radio Fishing. Everybody take care out there. Bye-bye.